Okay, so you know I love good wordplay. And Third Love is crushing their wordplay here. When you have a bra that pinches or slips or just isn't comfortable at all, or is comfortable but isn't your style, you've got problems. How excited was Third Love when they thought of problems? Well done, Third Love. I see you. When you wear Third Love bras, you've got no problems. They fix the problem of size exclusivity with their famous half-cup sizes that revolutionized the industry by giving more options to find a bra that fits. And they fixed the problem of guessing what bra will fit you with their virtual fitting room and other helpful guides. A bra size chart, a bra 101 education section that's basically an FAQ for all your burning questions, and a ton of great reviews from real people. My sister just texted me 99 problems, but pinching isn't one. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with code PODCAST15.
If you want to learn something new, would you rather learn it on your own, from a random teacher, or from folks who are the best of the best in that skill? I think I know which option most of you would choose. That's made possible by MasterClass. In recent months, they've added classes from the likes of Ava DuVernay, who gives us tips on how to reframe our thinking in all walks of life. One of our personal favorites recently was the one-on-one time we got with Amy Poehler in her class on preparing to be unprepared. So good. With Ava DuVernay. With over 180 world-class instructors and a 30-day money-back guarantee for new members, there's no reason not to get started today. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/hardthings. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/hardthings. masterclass.com/hardthings.
Welcome to We Can Do Hard Things.
Yes.
We are
doing them.
Let's do a check-in.
Oh.
Okay. I want to know how my wife and my sister are doing. Abby, I'm going to ask you first because what I keep hearing from people who listen to this podcast and love us very much are these two words. And those words I hear are more Abby.
Get in line. Everybody, all God's children want more Abby.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
That's lovely that people want more of me.
Yeah.
I'm great. Yeah. Life is happening. Our kids are doing wonderful. So much of my contentedness is wrapped up in making sure our kids are doing okay and that they're happy-ish and that they're doing all the things that they want to be doing with their life.
What does okayness mean? When you say you want the kids to be okay, what does that mean?
Well, I know that like life is weird, especially when you're going through teenagehood and young adulthood. And I think that the stresses and the courses of life that all three of them are on, I think happiness, the striving towards happiness, I don't believe in that. I think striving towards embodiment and like to have an understanding of making decisions and learning from them, like that's all I really wish for our kids. I think that I'm a very happy person and I feel complete happiness very, very infrequently throughout a day.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel contentedness often. And that's like what my dream is for them. So I guess what I'm saying is that I'm probably too codependent on our children's contentedness.
Yeah, I hear that. What is the difference between happiness and contentedness? Does happiness require like a zing or a buzz or something external to make it? And contentedness is like, in the absence of anything stimulating me, I still have a bit of peace and satisfaction.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think peace is satisfaction. Like that's all that I'm like in search of, I guess, with all the things that I do in a day, whether it's staying fit or going on a walk. I'm doing this new walk thing this year, which is interesting. I'm trying to walk every weekday.
Mm.
Those are the things that excite me.
Great.
What about you, sister? What's going on in your life? That was the most boring thing in the whole wide world. So probably less of Abby moving forward.
I mean, we're towards the beginning of the year. I was just thinking, I'm cold. Everything is cold all the time.
Yeah. So cold.
This time of year is cold. And so I grabbed this. This is the Washington Nationals blanket that is in my son's room because I don't know if the Pod Squad knows this, but I record the podcast from the window seat of my son's room.
Right.
So I'm just in a little corner. So I grabbed this little blanket and I was just thinking how my husband's like, I'm like, oh, they suck right now? They suck? He's like, no. They don't suck. They're just having a rebuilding year.
Oh, the
team. Having a rebuilding year. And I feel like, why do like whole franchises where there's billions of dollars riding? Mm-hmm. You could view it as they suck right now because their job is to not suck. Mm. But then you could say, no, they're intentionally and strategically and cyclically, it is appropriate that they're having a rebuilding year. Mm. So I just feel like for me, I think I'm having a rebuilding year.
Oh, girl, I love it. I love it.
I wondered where you're going with this.
Yeah.
I just feel like, you know what? I don't suck. Things don't suck. I am just doing what is in the proper life cycle of a winning team to intentionally and strategically have a rebuilding year.
What does that mean? What are you rebuilding?
Everything? I don't know exactly. I just feel like, why should all of the teams get to claim it like it's something they're doing on purpose?
Yeah, they don't know either, probably.
And not me. I think, and Abby, tell me where I'm wrong, but I think it's where you're like, okay, we are intentionally going to prune, get rid of some people. We're going to invest in other like talent and possibilities that the fruit will not
be seen,
be evident for a little minute.
And don't even ask for it. Don't even look for it.
Don't look for the fruit. Don't come around here looking for fruit. This is a fruitless rebuilding, you just trust that it is happening over here.
Yeah, I mean,
you're, I think that's what it's called.
Liberating.
So I come bearing no fruit, and I want you to trust.
But here's the thing. I think that this is like a perfect example of the way we could even approach our own lives. Like, there's going to be some seasons of all of our lives that we can't focus on certain things because we might not have it or we don't have the resources for it. Like, so some of these professional teams, what they do is they intentionally say, okay, we are going to spend less money on, you know, the top level talent, take a couple of years to build up some of our younger talent so that they can become that top talent. And then maybe at some point we'll invest and get some of these top dogs that come into our system and our franchise or organization so that we can make a run for a championship. That is a perfect example of like a person's life because we can't be always going to win the championship. I know that that might be an idealistic way of thinking about a life, but it's not. Like, we need seasons of like hibernation, of introspection, of intention, of, but it has to be intentional. Like, that's the thing that I think what the big takeaway for me is with pro sports. They're like, we are intentionally going into the season knowing that it is a rebuilding year. We might even come in last place. Like, some of these teams come intentionally
come in last then you get the first draft. Yes, exactly.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is it's a natural life cycle. It's very highly researched and very invested in and very strategic. But then we expect us as individual ecosystems to just every year be better than we were the last year and better and better and better and reaping all of these things, and it doesn't feel natural. It feels more natural that we would have rebuilding years where it might look on the surface like not much is going on, but really that might be the seeds of what is going to be happening in 3 years, 5 years, whatever.
And also, you know what? I'm going to move it to gardening.
Oh, in a development we did not see coming.
In another arena that Glennon knows very little about.
That's true, but it's going to be better than this situation. Okay. It's like, sometimes you're just planting a little teeny seed and you don't even know exactly what it's going to be, but it's not visible. It's just a little teeny seed beneath the dirt. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying is, I don't even know what it is. And I don't want anybody to expect anything of this little flower, but I'm just going to go out each day and just give it a little bit of water. That's what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. also, wouldn't it be amazing if what we learn is the point is just the like watering a little bit. That's the joy of it. It's not even whatever it becomes. Because we're always so result-based, like winning the championship. What's the thing going to be? But I just feel like so many people are going into the vibe of like simple, smaller, not results-based, not girl bossing, not we're going to win the thing, not relevancy, but like the beauty of just having your little plot and just watering each day. Yeah. And like, that's the whole point.
The beauty of like the ho-hum Monday, yeah. the beauty of the walking to the seed and the beauty of filling the can up with water, the beauty of that process.
Because otherwise we just fall back into the same hustle culture. Otherwise it's like, I'm resting right now. I'm sowing, but only so I could reap big later. Only so I can show up big later. But like, what if the whole point is finding the joy in the small sowing? And that is the reaping.
Yeah, totally. But sometimes fucking watering seeds is really boring. That's the problem.
I just also feel like it's a good life hack that if people are like, what are your goals for this year? What's your intentions? I just invite everyone to adopt the answer, I'm having a rebuilding year.
Yeah, period.
I just feel like, what are you going to say after that? It sounds very intentional, but people get to leave you alone. It's expect nothing of me. And I'm into it.
And you know how like at the press conferences, they might say, I'm having a rebuilding year and I'll be taking no further questions. I think that right. I'll be taking no further questions is important. You don't want to.
And it's implied.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh, so I guess we shouldn't ask any more questions about why nothing is happening.
Yeah.
Because apparently she's having a rebuilding year.
That's good.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Glennon, how about you?
I'll just tell you this. Last night I was getting in the bathtub with my book in my phone, because that's the best way to do self-care is with your phone.
Mindful, really, when you think about it.
Anyway, I have this moment where I'm holding a book, holding a phone. I'm naked, obviously. I try to put my foot over the bathtub and I notice, oh, I've lost complete balance and control. I am going down. I am going down. I'm not sure what to do. I'm not great in a spatial emergency. Okay. Like I'm not. Mm-hmm. So all I can tell you is I feel like I'm going to die. And then the 2 minutes later, I kind of come to as I do.
She didn't pass out.
No, totally conscious.
You fall into the tub.
Yeah. And then all I remember doing is looking down in the water and my book is at the bottom of the tub and my phone is at the bottom of the tub.
Oh, you saved a zero? Because in my head, I was thinking, what would Glennon save, her book or her phone? And it's a real toss-up in my head. But you saved neither.
Or me, because I have this, I look like an athlete. I look like someone who got beat up on a field.
She looks like a soccer player.
I'm a bathlete.
She's got a soccer player injury.
I have bruises. Shin. I have a huge bump. I was giggling when I came to because my book at the bottom of the bathtub says on embodiment. Because of course. So I don't know how I'm doing. I don't know. I'm in a rebuilding year.
Yeah, rebuilding year. Okay, there will be no further inquiries of you.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, and we talked about it because a few minutes later, because I was in bed watching TV and she just goes, babe, I fell. And so I like jump up and I run in there and she's just sitting in the tub and her phone and stuff are now out of the tub. She's pulled them out of the tub and I was just making sure she wasn't actually injured and she wasn't. She just got a little bruise. And I said, so when you were falling, did you think, where should I throw the book and phone
right,
away from the water? And she said, no, I don't even know what happened. And so I think what happened is she fell and she just placed the phone and the book directly into the tub. Just in there.
Yeah.
And then didn't immediately take the phone out. She was just looking at them both at the bottom of the tub, just like, oh, dang it.
Like, oh, darn.
Well, that's a moment. Looking down and being like, oh, my God, my phone and my embodiment book are at the bottom of my bathtub. It was kind of a cool moment, you know?
It was.
Anyway, I felt a little bit more wired and anxious the last few days. And that, to me, was a moment where the universe was like, I do have these moments where it's like a big slow the fuck down. You need to calm down. You need to calm down. Like literally, we are taking you down. So I kind of just like, I feel humbled when something like that happens to me. It's hard not to
feel. It's hard not to feel humbled when you drop your body, your phone, and your book in the tub. It's not a reach, Doyle, to feel humbled in that circumstance.
Yeah. So I just kind of crawled into bed afterwards and just did nothing.
Yeah.
For the rest of the day.
Is telling me to do less.
Yeah.
Okay, y'all, I'm here to tell you about a movie you've got to check out. It's called Challengers. It's by the amazing filmmaker Luca Guadagnino, who you'll know from Call Me By Your Name, another gorgeous film. It is starring the fierce and ridiculously wonderful Zendaya. She is in it with Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist. And it's about this woman who is a tennis genius. And when she gets taken out of the game because she's hurt, she transforms her husband into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. He just so happens ends up across the net from his former best friend and her former boyfriend, Patrick. It is all about jealousy and rivalry and love. And most importantly, it is one of those rare films that centers around a woman's fierce competitive fire and heart. It is gripping and sexy, and you're going to want to check it out. See Challengers now, playing only in theaters. You can get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you are feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Their specialized recruiting professionals engage with their proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal and administrative, and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Let's hear from our pod squatters. This is exciting. This is the first of the year episode where we are going to answer questions from the pod squad. And our goal, which we probably won't meet, is to keep it light, to like stay easy, till we can do hard things easy. All right. We are going to be easy breezy. We are not going to bring trauma.
Fingers crossed, everybody.
Which means
I cannot be held to account. I was not informed. I was unable to bring trauma. So 2 out of 3 you'll get.
I don't know how not to.
I don't either, but I don't know.
All right, let's hear it.
Okay, go ahead, Stephanie.
My name is Stephanie. And my question for Abby is, as I've gotten older and now have a kid who's 3.5, I am losing my play and my fun, and I'm going to be 36 this month, and I don't want to grow up, and I'm doing hard things, but I'm tired, I'm exhausted, and I just want to know, Abby, do you ever do anything when you start to feel like you're not playing enough that always brings you back to having fun? Is there any suggestions you could give me? Any morning things that you do to spark the play and the youthfulness back? My heart breaks when my daughter says, you want to play with me? And I think, yeah, no, I don't. I just want to make this dinner. And I know sister feels the same way, but I want my play back. I want my silly back. Abby, if you have any suggestions on how to not ground yourself in calmness, but ground myself back to my silly, playful, fun self, that would be great. I love you guys so much. And also, I listen to Tisha's song at the end of every episode. And 97% of the time I cry because it's beautiful and it touches me. And you guys touch me every single time I listen to the pod.
Oh, Stephanie. Okay. I will say, as I get older, play changes. So what your play and silliness might have looked like when you were 10, 20, 30 might look differently now. Honestly, sometimes when I'm cooking dinner, I'll throw on some music and I'll just sing. Mm-hmm. I'll just sing Whitney Houston as loud as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. I will dance around. I do like to play near Glennon because I know that she doesn't really know how to play. In fact, last night we had a situation in our house that Glennon was looking at me weird and I was pretending not to hear her. So I just kept going, huh? So I just was doing that and it was annoying her. And so Glennon started to play.
I tried to play.
So she, because I was saying, huh, and it was annoying her. So she started to poke her finger towards my mouth. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we were now in the act of play. And this was fun for me. And so I, of course, opened my mouth and I'm like pretending like if you stick it further in, I'm going to bite your finger. And I'm like, you know, and so she's going and she's pretending to do it. And then all of a sudden, Glennon, unbeknownst to me, because the way that I've learned how to play in the way of sticking a finger in somebody's mouth as a playful thing is you don't really stick your finger in their mouth because they're going to bite it. Right.
Glennon, they've already said, I'm going to bite it.
Yeah. So Glennon doesn't know the protocol of play like somebody who does. And so I'm going like this and Glennon actually sticks her finger in my mouth and I bite her
really hard. This is only 2 hours after the bathtub incident.
And she goes, ow, because it hurt.
It hurt bad. It hurt bad, people.
I did not expect her to actually, because it was eventually funny. She was actually mad for the first 10 minutes because I hurt her.
On account of you biting her?
Yeah, I told her that she broke my trust.
Yeah, she did say that.
Oh, God. You're so pathetic.
Stephanie, one thing that I would suggest is figure out what play means to you now. You know, like, obviously you have a young daughter and the truth is nothing is fun about playing with like a little kid. Because it's like,
they're like, the worst.
Dunk.
Yeah, just say it.
Yeah.
That's not play. That's work. That's what you're thinking of it wrong. Playing with your kid is not play. Playing with your kid is work.
That's right.
It's parenting. Play, you got to find your own play.
Yes.
Right.
And then,
baby?
Yes. And then eventually, if she sees you playing at your own thing, your daughter or your children will probably want to join in whatever that is. Like, for instance, I love surfing. That is like the highest level of play that I can get into. And we went surfing as a family a couple of years ago and we were all in the water. And I just thought, oh my God, we're all doing this together. And it was so awesome. So figure out what it is that you love and that makes you feel silly and that makes you feel playful and do that. And I bet you your daughter will maybe want to come join you.
First of all, I love that Stephanie said, I'm not talking about a calming, grounding practice.
Yeah.
That's important because it's two different things, right? Like we're so focused on like the wellness, calmness, meditation whole thing to just get our shit together. Mm-mm. That is one thing. But what Stephanie's talking about is something different. It's not that. It's not just mental health stuff. It's like silly, joy, fun, a different thing. So what is your thing right now, babe? Because you have all different
silly
things.
Well, I can bring silly, fun, joy into anything that I'm doing. I don't know. We'll just be like in line. Usually when we're in line somewhere where it's like boring and we're just like waiting to be like go to get served or whatever we're doing, I'll just like start dancing. I like break out and dance quite often.
Yeah, you do.
Like we did it this morning at the doctor's office.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, okay, let's go. Like here's some music. We're going to just make some joy out of it. I can do that in any scenario. I don't think that it's even like an activity that you need to do to play. Yeah. It's like uncovering or letting the part of you that wants to play come out in the normal parts of your life.
Do you think that the calming, relaxing, resting stuff is not the same as silliness, but that it is a prerequisite to the silliness? Because one thing that's silly vibes and fun, when you say dancing in line, what that requires is someone who takes care of themselves,
freedom,
who has enough energy,
peace,
who has enough rest to have that bubbly carbonated energy,
yes,
that is the injection of fun into other things. What I do know about you is you take very good care of yourself.
Yeah.
You take naps whenever the fuck you want, which is a revolution. You take good care of yourself.
I shut it down.
Right. I wonder if that's connected.
I shut it down. I shut myself down. I give myself 2 hours to just do whatever the hell I want during a day. And I do think it gives me the energy and the, mm-hmm, I don't know, it's like this period of time that gives me the space to just be myself in all the other parts of my life.
Yeah. And Stephanie's got little ones, so she might not be able to do that yet.
That might be impossible, actually.
I mean, and I think that joy and playfulness can be different things. I mentioned this last year. I've been doing a little bit of painting. And by painting, I don't even actually think that that is what I'm doing.
It is what you're doing. You made a painting and I think it's beautiful.
Thanks. So I'm not painting like things that you could recognize, because that feels like a skill. I'm not trying to have a skill. I'm just trying to have that moment of like, oh, look, I'm doing something completely unproductive. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, the colors are so pretty. Okay, I'm just going to admit this because this is the truth of things. How I started doing this was I was like, I set up the bunch of painting stuff upstairs and I was like, this is the kind of thing that I want my kids to see me doing. This is like the memory I want them to have of me. I set it all up right before Chase came home because I was like, I want him to come home and just have memories of my mom, the whimsical painter who just had so much fun. It was completely motivated
That's
wrongly.
Amazing.
Yeah.
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 So many of us do that, babe. That's not a you thing. That's a people thing.
I want to be viewed,
yeah,
this way,
well,
by my children.
Kids,
not that,
yeah,
I want to do it. Okay.
Right.
But then it was kind of great. Colors are cool. I felt like I was in elementary school again or something, but without all the trauma. Like it felt like it was enjoyable in the doing of it.
It's good.
And I was just by myself. There was nobody else there, which is also another reason why it was enjoyable. But there is something just messing with colors. It's like these little moments where you're like, this is in service of no one or no goal. And
but it was in service of you.
It's enjoyable.
I have like a hypothesis for me as a person that in order to have like this full life, I like to look forward to things quite a bit. And I like the outcome of other things. And this is important. I think play, it's something that you participate in that you look forward to. That doesn't feel like, mm-hmm, that there's no part of it that feels like, oh, this is a slog or I'm dreading this or whatever. I work out every day and I dread working out every single day, but I do it because I know it's good for me. And I love the feeling that I have when I'm done with that. And so play, I think, though, is about feeling excited before you do something, mm-hmm, and also having that same feeling last while you're doing it, mm-hmm, and missing it a little bit when, mm, you're not doing it.
Cool.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Do you have any play things that you're doing, Sissy?
Yeah, do you play?
No. I want to hear from Barb.
Okay. Barb.
Hi, my name is Barb. This is a really random question, but I actually like hearing the answer from people because I think it kind of reveals things about people that you may suspect but may not necessarily. When you're riding a roller coaster, do you prefer to sit in the front, the middle, or the back of that like roller coaster car thing? All right. Thanks, guys.
Ooh, Sissy, you're the one.
That is an awesome question.
It is a good question. And you've just recently ridden a roller coaster. What is your answer?
So, first of all, I love that Barb just said, do you front or the back? Of course, it has to be in the front or the back. But I think it depends on the individual coaster as to whether it has like launches or whether it has loops or obviously whether it has like the floorless situation. So, I love a roller coaster very much.
Sister is a roller coaster connoisseur.
And I think I've been thinking about it lately because we took the kids to Six Flags the day after Christmas because everyone in my family loves a roller coaster. It's like our unifying mm-hmm. force because we're all very different, but like in coasters we trust situation, we all love it. And I'm like, why do I love this so much? And I realized that it's the experience of being wildly out of control, but with the reality that you're actually meticulously under control. There is no actual, I mean, the chances of getting hurt at like a legit amusement park are 1 in 18 million. It's not at all risky or scary, but you feel like you're being absolutely nuts by going
interesting. It's fake loss of control. So it's a fake loss of control, sort of.
It's a genuine, wildly out of control-ness while knowing that it's very much in control. Because, I mean, you're flipping upside down. You're going in these ridiculous contortions. But it has also, you know, been regularly vetted by the safety and stress corrosion inspections. So you know that that is happening, but you're like, I'm nuts. Look at me. I'm crazy. Whereas it's like, why, Abby, I love going tubing when you are driving the boat. Because you can do crazy things with the boat and the tube is going nuts. But I can do it if you're driving. If someone else is driving, I won't do it. Because it is like, the extent to which I can let go is directly proportional to the extent to which I can trust. So I'm like, okay, I love this out of control feeling, but it's so rare to get the out of control feeling while you know that you're actually safe.
Yeah. Wow, that's deep.
So good. It's so good.
I think it's true.
It's so, like when people are like, just let go. I just need more information. Let go to whom? You know, when I sent you that meme over the thing that was like, does the process know that we're trusting it?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's in charge of the process? I'm happy. Exactly. I'm happy to let go if you give me the resume of the person who's going to pick up. Like, so the roller coaster is the perfect release knowing the fine print.
Yeah.
Well, it's a very JV version.
Interesting.
Of it gives your body the experience of risk and chaos while you're actually risking nothing.
I have a question. You didn't answer it. Middle, front, back.
For me, no middle, unless the lines are too long, in which case, if I want to get through it, I'll do the middle. For me, if it is a floorless coaster, I like to sit in the very front because then you feel like there's nothing, like it's just you going, you're like, wide open spaces just floating in air. If it's like a super launchy type coaster or there is a lot of twists and turns, then back. Because the very back has a major sense of weightlessness and it has, you get a lot more airtime on the back where you, because by the physics of it, when the front cars go down, right? Like you've got gravity plus the speed. And so the last car is like, whoop, you get airtime.
Okay. So this is play, Sissy. You're playing. This is play.
Yeah. No, this is a major play area for us. Yeah. I'm into it.
Glennon, are you middle?
I'm not. I'm the one who waits in line with you and then crosses over. I don't do roller coasters. I know that makes me unfun, but I also feel like,
why does that make you unfun?
I feel like the same way about roller coasters as I feel about horror movies.
Like, why would you want to intentionally scare yourself? There's enough scary things all around.
That, and that people maybe have some kind of, I don't know, like stability privilege. Like, that's great that you're doing so great that you're like, what I feel today is just too emotionally and physically steady. And so I need to flail myself.
Need to shake it up.
I need to fling myself into the air or fling myself emotionally into the abyss with a movie. Like, great. I love that for you. For me, it's all a scary enough.
Yeah, you don't have to explain yourself.
Okay, great. What kind of do? Because it's a podcast.
No, so I actually don't think you do. I used to hate roller coasters when I was a kid. And then because I learned about the safety mechanism that you just talked about, I think that that's like super important. And as I grew up and got older, I took more risk. Like, sister, have you ever gone skydiving?
No.
Would you?
Yeah.
Oh my God. You guys should go skydiving.
I mean, if it was a vetted place. Like, I wouldn't jump off a cliff into water.
Right.
It's like sanctioned.
The water hasn't been vetted.
Well, like, because we don't know. We're just doing this. We're just, this looks fun, but this isn't like a process that somebody has reviewed.
Well, you just let somebody go in front of you. That's what you do in a cliff. And P.S., I've gone skydiving and I would never do it again.
Again, I'm so comfortable on this earth. I'm so comfortable walking this earth that what I'm going to do is today, I'm going to go into the air and jump back towards it. Wow. Yeah.
Soda is delicious. Let's get that out of the way. Lemon lime, root beer, cherry cola. These are flavors that remind us of summer, of fun family days, of nostalgic moments in our lives. But it's soda, which naturally comes with its downside. Unless, of course, you reach for Olipop. Olipop uses functional ingredients with much less sugar than conventional sodas. And their flavors are still delicious and versatile. Orange squeeze to complement your burger, classic root beer for those who like a heartier taste, and a brand new lemon lime variety for those who seek out some citrusy tang. Long story short, Olipop is a great way to indulge in a delicious drink and bring back some of those nostalgic flavors from your childhood. I love Olipop. Olipop is sold online at drinkolipop.com or Amazon and available in almost 30,000 retailers nationwide, including Walmart, Target, Kroger, Whole Foods, and more. Plus, when you use code HARDTHINGS on their website, you can get 20% off your order. That's drinkolipop.com, code HARDTHINGS.
The opportunities for giving amazing life-changing gifts have just begun.
And yes, diapers are a life-changing gift. Imagine you're a first-time parent struggling with time management and financial burdens. Don't really have to imagine. I remember it directly. And all the challenges of your first child. And then you get a huge shipment of diapers funded by all your family and friends. That's a good feeling.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's exactly what Pampers is doing with their diaper stash. I love this so much. It's an online diaper fund. So you can contribute to a diaper stockpile and help ensure it never runs out.
And one of the most difficult things about buying diapers for others is making sure that you guess the right fits and sizes. And with Pampers Diaper Fund, all that guesswork goes away.
So if there's a new parent or expecting parent in your life, you will be making their lives a lot easier and showing them how many people are excited for their huge milestone.
Organizing a diaper stash is easy. Go to diaperstash.pampers.com to set up a fund and give the ultimate group gift. Love it.
Love it.
Love it. Love it. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the US with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the US? They have everything you could possibly want. Fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and more. Whatever you're interested in, no matter your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off your first purchase when you use the code HARDTHINGS at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code HARDTHINGS at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code HARDTHINGS. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
I want to hear all these little questions from Katie, and I think I'm going to read this one to you because I want to ask all of these of Sister, okay?
Oh, God.
This is from Katie. She says, OMG, this is Katie, and I have questions. Yes, I have a million questions, so I'm going to try and run through some of them. Okay, Sister, love you so much. If you could have dinner with one person, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Go.
Anne Louch. She was our great-great-great-great-grandmother. Whenever I think about who I would have dinner with, dead or alive, it's always ancestors. It's the only thing like I'm interested in. It was during the potato famine and she had to send her son, Patrick, when he was 6 years old, on a ship without her and her husband because they couldn't afford to come to America because they were going to die of starvation. And so he came to the US and he is our great, great grandfather. And I just would want to tell her our story.
Like what her sacrifice ended up.
Well, I just think all the time, I don't know. I know you said don't bring trauma into this and wah, wah, I did. But like, I think about, my God, how many, that impossible decision and how many of us have that story at somewhere in our histories of somebody making an impossible choice and that resulted in the lives that we have.
Yeah.
And, you know, even our work with the separated families at the border, I was thinking about how when we were watching that go down, these people trying to get to America for a better life and their families being torn apart in the process of just trying to survive these little kids, and like how deeply and profoundly that affected us to try to help. And that is the story of our own family.
Okay, what was your favorite concert?
Indigo Girls concert last year on Wendy's birthday. My friend who passed away, Wendy, we had huge signs of her face. It was her 47th birthday. And they sung to her and we all sung together and we all knew it was going to be Wendy's last. And it was just the most beautiful night. They met with Wendy and the entire Wolf Trap sung to her. It was my favorite concert.
So Emily and Amy from stage asked the entire audience to sing happy birthday to Wendy, right?
I love those two. That is so wonderful.
So beautiful.
That'll do it. I don't know if it gets any better than that. Okay.
Have
you ever thought about writing a book? These are all still questions from Katie.
Katie, I love you. I have thought about it because I've thought about everything, but I just feel like that's okay.
That's okay. Pass. Oh, do you ever feel like running for political office?
I can't imagine something more terrible than that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. I want to do what I think would be best and smart and effective. I don't want to be accountable to people.
Exactly.
And I feel like when you're running for office, you are making yourself accountable to people and what they want. But I'm not sure that being accountable to what people want is the way to make the best decision.
To lead. Damn straight. That is correct. And especially in the political realm, because the people to whom you're accountable are not even the people. The people to whom you're accountable are special interest groups. That's why what you're saying is funny, but it's actually at the crux of the problem. Mm-hmm. Of course, you can't be a political person because you actually want to make real change. So you can't be beholden to special interest groups, right?
Yeah.
Or you don't even want to be accountable to the people.
I would not be good at it because it would be like Larry would want to write to me about why his mail is coming at 4 as opposed to 3. And I'd be like, Larry, no one gives a shit.
Right.
We're not talking about that today.
What have you done for reproductive justice today, Larry? Right.
Right. Exactly. So I don't think it would be good for me. It would be a real thrill to have some kind of strategy or policy work. I haven't done that in terms of either like messaging or policy wise, but I would not like to be the person at the top whose face has like 1,000,000,000 tentacles in it. I would rather just be able to like do the right thing as I see it and make decisions as I see it. And I don't feel like those people are liberated to do that within the current structure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling it here and now.
What are you calling?
Is that when we get our first woman president, Amanda is going to be working for her.
Oh, so it's not going to be Amanda? That's good news.
No, I don't think that you would want that. I think that you would want to be working with somebody who is capable of being the face of the nation and like coming up with cool policies and cool ideas so that they can implement them.
I don't want to be president, and that is convenient for me on account of I am incredibly unqualified for the role.
That doesn't seem to matter. Okay, we're going to hear Allison. From Allison.
Hi, Glennon, Abby, and all. My name is Allison, and my question is, when do we stop being our younger selves? And I'm wondering this mostly because I was that teenager that caused a lot of problems when I'm in my younger years. And I feel like still to this day, now in my 40s, I'm still making up for those faults or those mistakes of my younger self. And I'm wondering, when do we stop having to be that part of ourselves? Thanks for all you do. Bye.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, I feel like this makes me think of internal family systems a lot, because I do too also have younger parts of myself that made decisions that I don't feel very proud of and caused some problems for me, for my family, as I was growing up. And I think when I look back on that, I like to think of like that part of myself, because when you can look back, it's almost like a whole younger year was a part of yourself while having all these parts coming up and growing and trying to process what was happening. So I think of like my younger self as like, oh, there were parts of you then that needed to express itself in certain ways to survive. And I feel like I've just rounded this corner where I'm like, thank God you did that, because you survived and you got here now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have a question about what she's saying. Is she saying, when do you stop being that in terms of your identity? Is like, oh, she was the bad one in the family, or she was the rebel rouser, or whatever the perception of you within the unit being that person? Or is she asking, this part of me that keeps recurring and showing up, when am I going to let this part go?
Oh, interesting. I didn't even think of it that way. That's so true. She could be saying, when will they stop seeing me as that person? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't even answer that question because I'm so far gone from like worrying about controlling other people's narratives. If that's what you're doing, Allison, like they're treating me that way because that's the way I used to be. I think that part is just out of our control completely. Mm-hmm. How other people perceive who we are is like a fake idea now. So much joy and peace comes for me when I remember that the reason I'm stressing is because I'm trying to control what another person thinks of me. It's like just another version of disembodiment, right? Like I'm like not in my body right now. I'm in not even in my own mind. I'm in your mind of what you might think of me. It's like crazy making.
But in order to let go of that, Glennon, do you have to have an alternate grounding? Like in order to let go of your what I think you believe about me, can I not let that go until I have a very firm grasp on what I believe about me?
I don't think so, because I would not say that that's a solid thing that I have. If we're waiting for this like epiphany of selfness before we stop that other thing, then we might never stop that other thing. I don't think like you get it nailed and then you stop worrying about the other thing. I think it's just like you sense the insanity of what I'm doing with my life is I am trying to get into a million other minds and somehow Jedi mind trick them into a certain way of thinking about me, which I don't even know what they're actually thinking. That's just an absolute way of not living, right?
Well, that's a relief. Great.
Right. Like you really don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Like you really do not have to spend time thinking about what other people think about you. And by the way, I'm just like preaching to my own choir self with this. Like, yeah. I know that that's true.
We all are.
And it's a very hard thing for me to remember. But the moments I do remember that throughout the day or week or month are like my best moments where I'm like, oh my God, that takes away 99% of my problems. Mm-hmm. I actually don't have to think about what other people are thinking about me. If what Allison is asking is like, when do I actually stop making penance for that person I was or feeling like I have to be so good because I was bad? Or maybe she's doing what I do, which is like, okay, I was a really big fuck up for a while and now I'm like on the straight and narrow. So am I like a good person now and I was just pretending to be bad before, or am I a bad person and I'm just pretending to be good now? It's like all this stuff. What I think is the pattern that I can see in my life is I was myself.
Yep.
Okay. And then the fuckery started around 10, right? And then I started thinking that I was bad. And so I hid and had like a very long stretch of I'm just a bad girl. I'm a bad person. And that meaning like whatever addiction is, whatever bulimia is, whatever alcoholism is, breaking laws, whatever. Bad, 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 bad. Rebel, rebel, rebel. Then I got pregnant with Chase. I thought I saved myself by being good. I'm just going to be perfect. Right? Both of those turned out to be have nothing to do with who I was.
That's right.
The rebellion or the obedience, the bad or the good, had nothing to do with who I was. So I don't take responsibility for it. Like, I don't know who the hell I was from the time I was 10 to whatever. I think of it as one long experiment.
Yeah.
Okay. But what I'm trying to do right now at 47 is absolutely become again who I was when I was 7. Mm-hmm. With this, like, wiser self that's along for the ride. Mm-hmm. But when I hear Allison say, how do I not be my youngest self? Or I'm trying to do the opposite. I'm trying to, and I think it's like a theme of turning out to be a theme of this episode, like play, rest, what, like these little things that I allowed myself to be, feel, do as a child. And then culture told me no in a million different ways. I'm trying to get back to that place that now that I'm 47, I get to say yes. Mm. I get to say yes to any of those things that little 7-year-old wanted, whether it was expressing herself, whether it was resting, whether it was eating, whether it was doing nothing productive, whether it was crying, whether all of the things that she needed to do to feel free is what 47 and my 50s are going to be about. And so all the experimental years, whenever they were, Allison, whenever the hell you were doing exactly what you needed to do to be this woman in your 40s, oh, well, life is one long experiment.
That's right.
So let's just all get back. Good is a cage, following all the rules. Obedience is a cage. Rebellion, hurting ourselves. I heard in a show last night, flailing ourselves against an uncaring universe. Like the universe, we're not punishing. The universe doesn't give a shit. We're just like hurting ourselves. Rebellion's a cage. Obedience is a cage. What is freedom? Mm. Right? Like I've been good. I've been bad. I want to be free now. And the best way I can think of to do that is to go back to who I was when I was 7 and give myself permission to do everything that she would have wanted to do.
Yeah.
So that's that. Thanks for this check-in. It really ended up being very light and airy and easy breezy.
Minimal traumatic stuff.
I mean, I think we talked about roller coasters, so that's kind of light, right?
Yeah, but we got to the depth of that, which is cool.
I love you both so much.
Love you. Yeah. Love you, love you.
Love you so much.
7-year-old me would have been really excited if she knew that one day we were going to be working by playing with our wife and our sister.
So fun.
7-year-old you would be happy to know you were just going to have a couple of rebuilding decades in between.
Having a rebuilding 10s, 20s, and 30s, and 40s.
I love you guys.
Pod Squad, we love you. You can do hard things. Bye.
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 If this podcast means something to you, it would mean so much to us if you'd be willing to take 30 seconds to do these three things. First, can you please follow or subscribe to We Can Do Hard Things? Following the pod helps you because you'll never miss an episode, and it helps us because you'll never miss an episode. To do this, just go to the We Can Do Hard Things show page on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and then just tap the plus sign in the upper right-hand corner or click on follow. This is the most important thing for the pod. While you're there, if you'd be willing to give us a 5-star rating and review and share an episode you loved with a friend, we would be so grateful. We appreciate you very much. We Can Do Hard Things is produced in partnership with Cadence 13 Studios. I give you Tish Melton and Brandi Carlile.
I walked through fire, I came out the other side. I chased desire, I made sure I got what's mine. I continue to believe that I'm the one for me, and because I'm mine, I walk the line, 'cause we're adventurers and heartbreaks on map, a final destination. Continue to